Hey everyone in podcast land, it's Aaron, here to remind you that Timber Winter Music Festival is coming to you in Leavenworth, Washington, January 29th and 30th of this year, 2016, with artists such as Strand of Oaks, Fruit Bats, Grace Love and the True Loves, Iska Doff, and many, many more. How about Ebu? How about the Young Evils, Industrial Revelation, Benjamin Verdu? Yeah, so many. And a hot toddy garden. And me hosting the festival. It's going to be great, man. Join me for a hot toddy and snow and fun. Oh, man. Maybe some sledding. It's going to be great. Join me. 29th and 30th of January, Leavenworth, Washington. Timber Winter Music Festival. Get your tickets now at timbermusicfest.com. Well, hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 282 in what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Yes, indeed, folks, we've got a great show planned for you this week. Peter Quirk of the band, lead singer of the band The Cave Singers, will be joining us here in the backyard in just a moment. Before we do that, though, we've got a couple of things to talk about. It's been a rough week here at the Roden household. Of course, David Bowie died. Then Alan Rickman and my very, very close friend PJ Allers died on the same day. If you've been listening to the show for any amount of time, PJ Allers, Patrick James Allers, was a close friend of this show. He kind of started me on the path of where I am today with this show. And I owe him many, 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 many thanks. It was a very, very sad deal, his passing. Of course, he is survived by his lovely wife, Alvina, and his 8-year-old daughter, Sophie. And it's a bum deal, man. He's been dealing with colon cancer for the last year. I don't know if I would recommend. I can't listen to it. But he did a great show that was much lauded called I'm Dying Here. It was a podcast about the experience of finding out you have cancer and knowing that it's terminal and being so young. Guy was only like, what, 32, 33? Yeah. I'm going to miss him a whole lot. And I tried to do this like 3 or 4 times and could not make it through without just curling up in a ball and just crying my eyes out. So anyway, there is a donation site open for PJ and his family at Caring Bridge. And I'm going to post a link to that on our show blog at air-raid.net. And I would urge all of you to donate a little something to the family because it's been very hard on them. They're not Rockefellers like Luke Burbank would say, but they need some help through this hard time. And even though he has passed, the medical bills are continuing to stack up. Yeah. So we'll have a link to that to donate to PJ's family. If you would like to, $1 here, $5, $10, $15, $20, anything helps, my friends. And we'll post something on Facebook later this week as well for that. Okay, let's move on. I'm still thinking about doing like a tribute show to PJ because he's been on this show before with his brother Nick, who was part of the Grapes of Rad podcast. And I don't know if I can do it, man. I I've, like I said, I've tried to do this like 4 or 5 times now, and I've just curled up and sunk into a ball and just cried my eyes out. So we'll see. We'll see if that comes to fruition. So anyway, let's get happier things. Happier things. No more death, please, for a little while. Can we hold off on that? All right. Peter Cork of the band Cave Singers, the Cave Singers, joining us this week. This was a fun one. We had a great, great chat. And it's something that I've been trying to set up for probably 2 years. He's been a hard guy to nail down. So I was stoked to hear that they were coming out with a new album, which, by the way, is coming out February 19th. It's called Banshee, and I've had the opportunity of hearing a few songs off of it, and it is fantastic. I've been a fan of these guys for a long time. Like I said, I've been trying to get Peter on the show for about 2 years, and, you know, finally came to fruition, man. We finally worked it out. We got a time that works, and he came back to the backyard to chat with me. Now, Peter also has a solo album that came out called Fail On, Fail Better. And it's out now, and you can find that at Bandcamp, peterquirk.bandcamp.com. And it's a great, great album. He was nice enough to give me a copy of that. And we're going to be playing a track off of that in the middle section of the show. And then some new stuff at the end, okay? So this, you know, this conversation with Pete gets a little heavy. And it's very, very interesting to hear him talk about his life, because it's been a series of, and what you'll hear is that it's been a series of just basically finding himself, finding out about himself, finding his spot in life. The way he describes it is very interesting and quite fun to listen to. So I know you guys are going to enjoy that. Now, if you don't recognize the name, The Cave Singers, you've probably heard this song, okay? We're going to play a little snippet of this. This one is called Seeds of Night, off of their 2007 release, Invitation Songs, that was on Matador Records. Yeah, you've heard this. Check this out. Right, you've heard that song. You've heard Seeds of Night. It's been on like every commercial that I can think of. But not my favorite song. Not my favorite song off of that release. They've had many releases since then. Since 2007, but this is one of my favorites. And this will be our first full music break, okay? And then we're going to get into the chat with Mr. Pete Quirk of the Cave Singers. All right, this one's called Dancing on Our Graves from the same album, Invitation Songs. Came out back in 2007 on Matador Records. And we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid podcast for your ears with special guest this week, Pete Quirk of the Cave Singers. Be back in a moment. We'll be right back. You've heard about the Powerball jackpot, right?
No.
It's at $1.5 billion today.
In Seattle? Washington.
Powerball is like a whole bunch. I think it's like nationwide.
National.
Yeah. Yeah.
$1.5 billion. I don't know. Maybe I go to Nordstrom's or something. You know what I mean?
Get yourself a new pair of slacks.
Just unrestricted. Go to Nordstrom's. Get whatever I wanted. Some gold shoes or something.
Fuck, Peter, you could call. You could own Nordstrom's. You could buy the whole store.
But I think that they're doing a good job. Their return policy is excellent. So I let them be.
Yeah?
I think I'd buy a house.
Yeah?
I mean, if I'm just thinking about what I would do for myself.
Right.
Right off the bat, kind of self-centered. I'd buy a house, I think.
There you go.
In Washington.
Yeah.
And then I'd probably buy a house in New Jersey.
Yeah.
Because that's where my parents live. And so I could be close to there and I could kind of be bi-coastal.
Perfect.
Which has always been kind of like a fantasy of mine, being able to, because I love it here.
Uh-huh.
And I love it there and I love my parents and stuff. So yeah. I'd love to be. And my brother lives out there. And so I'd be able to kind of come and go back and forth.
Would you buy a helicopter or a Learjet to shuttle yourself back and forth?
I think a private jet or something. Like, I wouldn't have to fly it. Like,
no,
I wouldn't.
No,
in the, no. I'd be in the
unless
bag.
You wanted to. I mean, you'd have time to figure that out.
Yeah,
I'm guessing. Being a billionaire and all,
with that much money, maybe I could like, I could like learn how to fly a jet without having to learn. Like, it could be some kind of like mind thing that happened to me, like while I was asleep.
You could get a chip,
yeah,
or
like
something.
A chip, or like
yes.
Like kind of, yeah, something like that.
I like
so
that
I would
idea.
Look into that, but then also if I could figure that out, I would actually probably start making more money by figuring something out.
Well, that's
like that.
What
and
you
I
make
could double,
the,
double
yeah,
my money.
That's what they say. Mm-hmm. You make the money work for you.
That's it.
You know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And I was, you know, mulling this over today because I bought 20 Powerball tickets.
Yeah.
I'm such an idiot. Well, I told the lady,
you got to take a chance.
I know, right? Dude. I mean, you're not going to win if you don't have any tickets.
Oh, give yourself a
right?
chance. Yeah.
Yeah. I told the lady was like, you know, that's $40, right?
Yeah.
This is $2 a ticket. I was like, yeah, it's $40 of daydreaming.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Totally worth it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny, too, because when I like on some kind of serious level, like, okay. Well, my dad was just telling me. I was talking to him on the phone that like a wealthy person is just the definition of a wealthy person is someone that doesn't spend more than they earn.
Right.
So that's all it means.
Oh yeah.
So
for sure.
So a rich person could spend more than they earn. They're not necessarily wealthy.
Right.
So
right.
If I had $1.5 billion, what if I ended up, you know, like all of a sudden I spend $2 billion or something. And then I'm like, I'm looking for a studio apartment in
yeah.
Capitol Hill or
right.
something. I'd be like, yeah,
I
blew it, you know.
You're $500 million
like, yeah,
in debt.
I don't change. You
all
know,
of a sudden.
Yeah. Like, and I feel like that happens to people, you know.
Oh, dude.
All the
yeah.
time.
Have
like,
you ever seen, these, there was a, I don't know if it was like a 60 Minutes thing or like or 2020 or whatever one of those shows is, but they did like this in-depth reporting, this story on mm-hmm. people who had won big jackpots.
Oh, yeah.
In the lotto, right?
Yeah.
And most, I mean, 9 times out of 10, mm-hmm. these people just, like, didn't know how to handle it.
Yeah.
And it was gone.
Yeah.
Just totally gone.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think also there's been different points in my life, or maybe a day or a year or different things where, like,
yeah.
even having $1.5 billion maybe may have not made me any more happy.
No.
You know what
no.
I mean? I just would have been unhappy at a really like luxurious place or something like that.
Right.
You know, like at the top yeah. of the Four Seasons being like, ah, nothing's working out. You know?
Right.
Or like something like that. Because it's kind of like that the thing where it's like, well, money's not gonna solve my problems or another person.
Oh sure.
Or like that kind
yeah.
of stuff. But
well
but
P. Diddy said it best.
Oh here we go. Yeah.
You know?
Uh-huh.
Mo money, mo problems.
More, yeah.
Not more.
Yeah.
Mo.
Yeah. I think that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I guarantee it,
yeah.
man.
And I, yeah.
Yeah.
He's one of my spiritual teachers.
So. I don't think it would be easy. Like, that's, you know, you win a jackpot, like let's say there's like a $30 million. That's like life changing money, right?
Yeah, it's insane amount.
But totally insane.
Yeah.
But 1.5 billion,
right,
is like generational changing money, right? That's like your kids.
Yeah.
Are set.
Yeah.
If it's managed correctly, right?
That's true. Yeah. I mean, it's so much money that you can sort of take the first month and kind of set yourself up in a way that you've always maybe dreamed of or something, right?
Yeah.
And then you have, I mean, so much left over that you could like be like, all right, well, now I'm going to work on cancer research. Now I'm going
right.
to work on like all these different things.
Oh,
it's,
yeah.
It's like life-changing money to you, but then to so many other people.
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
But.
Because what are you going to do with all of it? Like. A guy like you or a guy like me, like me and my wife were talking about it, just kind of daydreaming last night about it on the couch, yeah. You know, and just like,
yeah.
It's like, what would you do? Like, what would we do? Mm. And he was like, well, first of all, you set up a trust for the kids that they can't touch until they're like 35.
Right.
So they don't turn into assholes.
Maybe push that up to 40.
40? You think 40?
I don't know. I'm 40.
You met him. So
like, I just meet for me. I'm like maybe ready to handle
Oh.
That. I'm maybe ready to handle that trust now, you know?
Right, right.
It doesn't, you know,
yeah. Maybe. I don't think I'm even ready for it. Holy shit. But yeah, you set up a trust that they can't touch for a long time, right? Yeah,
smart.
You pay for the college.
Yeah.
You do that whole thing. You make sure they got a good education, got a good head on their shoulders.
Yep.
You pay off your parents' mortgage, something like that,
mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
You don't tell your deadbeat brother about it.
Yep.
Because, man, he's going to be knocking on the door.
Mm.
So you just keep that a secret.
But you could still give him money because you have so much. Who cares?
You buy him a turkey.
A turkey?
At Thanksgiving. I'd say you spend a couple bucks on
so
a turkey.
Sad. Just a turkey? That's all he gets? How about get him a turkey farm? Right.
Buy him a turkey
farm. So he never
farm.
Has to get turkey.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, you take all of your close friends, your inner circle, you take them on a nice trip for a month. You know?
That's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then sounds great.
Charity.
Yeah.
Bunch of charities. There
yeah.
you go. I got it all thought out, man.
I mean.
It all figured out.
I like right now, I don't even, you know. Yeah, I think it would be like the thing so I could see my family more often. Although
sure.
my brother lives in San Diego, so I
yeah.
would like go down there. And then, yeah, I mean, it's so much money that I would just like have to, you know, contribute it back to society or I would be like. A horrible person if
right.
I didn't you
You'd
know?
Just feel guilty
but, yeah like I like just like build a castle in Ohio or something and like live in it and put
right.
all the money in the middle and no one can have it
yeah
you know
build a second Fort Knox
yeah, to just fly my Learjet around
yeah Fort Quirk
yeah and I don't even spend any of it
no god know? No
so
no.
But I don't. That sounds funny to me. Like to me, that would be a funny thing to do.
You just be.
I
like
feel like I'd get a lot of press.
Yeah, totally.
And then just try to sell the cave singers. Yeah, right. That's like the only place you could get.
Yeah, yeah. You'd be like the really weirdo, like billionaire, the
yeah.
very eccentric yeah. billionaire.
Or,
I like that.
Or if you buy the new Cave Singers record, it comes with $1,000 in cash, and it's $10.
It's $10. That's great.
That's the promotional.
A solid gold
be
CD.
Like, well, we sold 500 million records, you know?
Right, right.
And then that would be a great way for me to spend over the 1.5 billion too. Be like, yeah, but you just spent $3 billion. So I don't know. Maybe I'm not the best person to get a 1.5 billion.
Yeah, maybe not.
Maybe like just give me a million and I'm good.
Pete Quirk never finished math class.
Yeah. Mm-mm. No.
Well, welcome to the backyard, man.
Thank you.
This is a treat for me because I don't know if you know this.
Mm-hmm.
You probably don't. And I don't want to try to make you feel bad,
mm-hmm.
but here it comes.
Mm-hmm.
I've been trying to get you on the show for about 2 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh.
And so it finally worked out.
Good, yeah.
And you're here,
mm-hmm.
and it's going well so far,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Yeah.
Whenever you start a conversation talking about Lotto.
Yeah.
Things are going
That's
well.
A great opener. I prefer that than like, what do your lyrics mean?
How did you come up with the name Cave Singers? No, that's not a real question. Don't answer that. Yeah,
I just want to talk about the billions and P. Diddy.
And P. Diddy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe we'll talk about Bowie here
yeah.
in a little bit. So, yeah, you are the singer for the Cave Singers, a band mm-hmm. that I've enjoyed thoroughly for many years.
Cool.
And But you said you grew up over in Jersey? Is that where you're from originally?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm from New Jersey. Middletown, New Jersey. I was born in Red Bank, New Jersey, which is kind of the town near there. I left there.
How come?
I left to, like, go to college.
Yeah.
When I was, like, 19. Mm-hmm. And then I went to a few different colleges and ended up in Philadelphia and lived in Philadelphia for a while. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why did you go to a few different colleges? Were you just testing stuff out, testing out the waters?
I just, like, was, like, more into the adventure and sort of going to different places of it all, I think. And,
sure. You're a traveling soul.
Yeah. I was, like, becoming – I was really interested in – well, I guess I was trying to find myself, really. But and I continued that search. But I was just really into the idea of going to different places. So I was like, oh, cool. It would be interesting to go to Philadelphia and go to college there because I want to go to Philadelphia and I want to live in Philadelphia.
Why Philadelphia, though? What
basically, just because it was a different place.
Really?
I mean, in a way. And it was a city and I wanted to live in a city. And I was into, like, music and art and stuff like that. And I had never really been there, and it just seemed kind of exciting to me. And I literally had no idea what I was doing.
Yeah.
You know? Like, in the and I think I maybe they had a little bit of, like, a writing emphasis in their sort of, like, literature department, and that interests me as a student.
Yeah.
Yeah. At the time.
So you were just looking at like college classes as something that, like, not really to further some sort of job prospects, but more of, like, what just interested you.
Yeah.
What kept you occupied.
Yeah. I was interested in school to further sort of my creative, talents or something like that.
Yeah.
And I was interested in, you know, at the time I didn't really do music really. I just did writing. So I was interested in pursuing an undergraduate degree in writing or literature, and then going to graduate school for creative writing.
Okay.
That's what I thought about.
So you wanted to be a writer.
Yeah, at that time in my life, yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of, like, the trajectory that I was thinking about.
Uh-huh. Who were your guys?
At the time, I was reading a lot of poetry, so I probably was thinking about going to school for poetry at the time. Uh-huh. And I really liked this guy, C.K. Williams, and James Tate, who passed away recently.
Yeah, yeah.
And who's a really great poet. I also like this guy, Bill Knott, who also...
I've heard that. Heard that name, too. I've never really been into poetry. I don't know much about it, but...
Those are people, but I didn't really know about them. Mm-hmm. I knew about C.K. Williams probably at the time.
Yeah.
But those other guys I had found, like, and been exposed to from taking more classes.
Actually,
I found out about James Tate from taking classes at the Hugo House here in Seattle.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah.
Cool. Right on.
This teacher, Deborah Woodard, who's a great teacher. She was like, oh, I think you'd like this poet. And that's why I got into him.
Nice.
Excuse me. He actually has a book of poems called The Naomi Poems, which is a really
great... Is that where the name of your album came from?
Yeah, I think. Oh, okay. I mean, there was some other reasons that I thought that was a cool name.
Oh, okay.
But that was the original reason. Yeah, because...
An obsession with the actress Naomi Watts.
Right.
Is that where that came from? Okay.
Yeah.
No, I get it. She's beautiful.
Well, before that, it was going to be Mo Money, More Problems, but it's already taken.
Nice callback.
Yeah.
Love it.
It was already taken. So, but anyway, I ended up going to college and, you know, I partied, man. Like, I mean, I was, like, interested in these things, but mostly what I did was, like, order pizzas and, like, party. And
How did your first year at college go?
Oh, my first year of college went pretty well because it was a community college and I lived at home.
Okay.
And great community college in New Jersey. And then, I was more interested in, like, extracurricular activities
sure.
than my studies,
sure.
let's say.
And, yeah.
And stuff like that.
I was,
which I think
was
a lot of
well.
People, and I ended up not finishing college.
You didn't?
I never graduated, no.
Oh, okay, no. Okay.
Mm-mm. My kind of interest in those other areas and kind of just like, I couldn't concentrate. I didn't even know what I was doing.
Right.
You know, I didn't have any focus. I had focus in other areas that were creative. I wanted to write all the time.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to, like, go on adventures. I wanted to, like, live the things that I was reading in books, maybe. And I just had ideas about what my life should be like, and it wasn't what it wasn't living in the dorms,
right,
in Philadelphia, right, in North Philadelphia, with all this kind of poverty around me and stuff like that. That didn't work for me.
Yeah, you know?
And also I had a hard time concentrating and stuff like this. So, and that was a long time ago. But I think it all worked out in the end. But I never finished.
Yeah.
I was kind of asked to leave.
I barely. Yeah, I got put on my first year of college. Mm-hmm. I got put on academic probation.
Oh yeah.
Scared the shit out of me because I didn't really tell my parents about it.
Yeah, yeah.
And until they got the letter.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they sent two or something.
Right, exactly. Sent one to you and one to your parents.
Yeah. But I was like very, I was a very romantic person at that time.
Yeah.
Especially. And I was young and like I think that, I remember being... like, and I kind of was like full of shit a little bit, yeah, you know, and
I think most 19-year-olds
totally,
are.
You gotta be, you know, and I remember sitting around with this like kind of group of like writers who are all 18 and 19,
right,
you know, and like from Delaware or something. And they were just like, oh, do you like Ezra Pound, you know? And I'm like, yeah, I love her poems, you know? And they're like, yeah, it's a dude. But like, that was kind of my, like, I would just like bullshit.
Right, right.
And be like, oh yeah, like I totally like, you know. Like, you know, I love Absalon by Faulkner. You know, I haven't read it yet, but like,
I think it's got a great name.
Yeah, it sounds amazing. I've studied the name quite a bit, and the
I've heard Faulkner is like really kind of like great.
Right, and I've like read a lot about him on Wikipedia. Like, I know who his grandfather is or something, but no, I haven't read that novel. So that's kind of how I was at 19. Fantastic. I was kind of just like. And then I ended up leaving college prematurely because I should have, and I shouldn't have been there. You know, right. I was wasting their time anyway.
Just wasn't the right fit.
No way. And then I moved downtown.
Uh-huh.
And then started going to shows, like kind of like more like basement shows.
Yeah.
Punk shows.
Sure.
Although I wasn't really a punk or anything like that, but I would kind of go to shows like that, and I was ended up being a bike messenger and becoming part of like these different countercultures and stuff like that. And that was really, I was like, this is what I've been looking for. You know, these guys want to go to this train trestle and drink beer, you know, and hang out under the moon and all this. And I'm like, yeah, that's
it.
That's what I've been waiting
that's
for.
It.
This is what I've been waiting for. So I kind of have, that was like a sort of a arrival type moment for me, and I was like, I love this.
You're still around like 19 years old at that point.
I was probably
fairly impressionable.
I was probably, I well, 19, I was still in New Jersey. Then I went through the Philadelphia college experience, and then I was probably 22.
Okay.
21, okay. 22 when I started the Bike Messenger kind of basement show, meeting people in Philadelphia underground music scene.
Was part of the kind of the eye-opening experience must have been the music, right?
It was, but the music, and I always loved music. I love listening to music. I was like a fan of music.
Sure.
I didn't really make music all that much. I did a little bit in high school, but mostly I was.
Did you play any instruments?
Not really.
No.
No.
Okay.
Mm-mm. Yeah, I'd like bang on, you know, play guitar a little bit.
Sure.
But like, I never learned guitar.
Mm-hmm.
The music was sort of the catalyst for congregating, you know, with these people that I had met. But really the things that happened outside of that were the things that I really liked, the road trips and the kind of like, you know, squats and like different houses and just kind of milling around and always on a bike and cruising around and all this, you know, and writing about it and like kind of like all of a sudden my life is taking on this kind of novelistic kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of like my life is becoming sort of like a symbol of what I thought creatively would be cool.
Almost
to
like
write about.
Yeah, sure. Almost like the Beat Generation.
Yeah, Beat Generations. Bit. And then there's this like other movement, the Symbolists, who is like Verlaine and Rimbaud and like stuff like that. And they were like kind of, I feel like the Beats before the Beats.
Yeah, all. I love her poetry.
Yeah. She was a friend of Faulkner's. She is. So anyway.
That's interesting though. Like, I mean,
but it was cool though. Like,
yeah. Were you, so you said squats though, like were you, you were living in kind of like,
no. I went to parties at squats.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. But I lived like in a house with like eight other maniacs.
Right.
And I lived in an apartment and like,
yeah.
But
so then, it's not like you were living in squalor.
No.
Or anything like
I mean, we were just like 22-year-old dudes that didn't really like worked. Some had jobs, some didn't, and lived in a gigantic house way in deep West Philly. That was so cheap. I mean, my rent was like $100 a month.
Oh my
god! But if it was squalor, it was like kind of like chosen squalor.
Oh sure,
yeah. Like it was like I don't know how not to live in squalor now, and I'm on my own, and I'm kind of like a kid, you know? Like I'm not. I don't know how to live in as an adult. There's no aspirations to do that.
Yeah.
I just want to like drink beer, hang out in the kitchen, you know, play dice, go to the show, and then like go drink more beer at the wherever we end up at night, you know, break into an old factory, do, you know, stuff like that.
And yeah.
That was cool. That was, yeah, it was great. Like it was really, I felt like I found what I was looking for at that time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
But it's funny because you always, I think that there's always, for me, like something to find. Hey, who are these people? I don't know. I think they're cool. Hey, I'm with them. Hey, now I feel like I fit in. That feels good.
Oh, yeah.
And then it was the same thing when I was in high school. Hey, like, I don't really know anybody. I went to the middle school that only, like, transferred a few people over. Hey, this track team, like, seems cool. Hey, now I'm part of the track team. Ah, cool, I fit in. You know, like, it's always just, like,
looking. Finding your place, yeah.
A group of people, so, like, now I'm not alone.
Right.
But, like, also, I contributed. Like, I wasn't just, like, you know, and it was exciting. It was cool. And it got me into at least being around music a lot. And I always, like, sang or made up lyrics or did that kind of thing for bands. That's been going on periodically.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah.
So when did that start though? Was that like a high school thing?
That started in high school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Singing in bands and stuff.
Yeah.
Or at least just like, you know, for lack of a better term, jamming.
It was jamming
with friends.
Yeah. For it was like kind of almost because I always had an interest with language and the musicality of words and stuff like that. And I always wrote since middle school. That was always an interest of mine.
Yeah.
And like putting sentences together and building things like that. So in high school, I met people that played music. So I just started singing because I didn't know how to play any instruments.
Right.
So it's like, well, I'll go sing over here.
Yeah.
And then I think there was, into the idea of improvisation. And that's something that stayed. In terms of how I come up with lyrics, how I come up with melody for everything.
Well, it sounds like you kind of have that mindset too, right? Like being a writer, I mean, your propensity to come up with words is and describe like a situation or a setting or you know whatever you are doing. I mean, is a great trait to have in a singer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was never able to do that. Like whenever I would write lyrics, they would always come across like, and I don't know, I'd love to hear your thoughts on it too.
Sure.
Like whenever you write or whenever I wrote lyrics in bands that I was in, they would always just seem like the cheesiest fucking things in the world.
Yeah.
You know, and it would be like to the point where it'd be embarrassing to bring it to band practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the improvisation thing.
Yeah.
Making stuff that like didn't really make any sense.
Yeah.
For me was always much more fun.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Is that how you felt too? Like did you ever have that sense like when you would write stuff down like this is just not cool?
I feel like I'll change things if I don't think they seem right.
Right.
I'll also like I'll give it an opportunity to like kind of come out.
Sure.
And see what it is, in terms of some kind of intuitive thing or inspiration, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But like, I've also been writing for a long time, so I feel pretty comfortable with like the writing aspect.
Sure.
Of lyrics and stuff like that, just because I have like a lot of practice doing it.
Yeah.
Like I've been doing it for a long time now.
Uh-huh.
Just working with like words and stuff. I've been doing writing more than I've done like lyric writing.
Right.
So, and I think lots of different writing is different in lots of different ways, like poetry.
Yeah. Or but like when you
fiction or sure. something like that,
but when you started, like it yeah. probably didn't, it didn't snap into place all of a sudden.
No.
Right? Yeah. Everybody's got to start from somewhere.
Yeah. I think that I've always, I'm trying to be better about being like that. I've always like had like a natural ability, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think I've probably like been like, oh, I don't know. Like, you know, like, but like, I've always been able to describe, like to me, it's just description,
right? You know, sure.
in a way. And, sure. and how am I going to describe things? Well, I prefer to describe things more with imagery
uh-huh.
than maybe just like emotion. I feel really sad. Well, I'd rather describe an image so you know that I'm sad.
Yeah.
That makes more sense to me.
Yeah.
And I'm better at doing that than, I just think that's more of an interesting way. And I gravitate towards other people that do that.
Yeah.
Authors, musicians, or just people that talk that way when they talk.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Metaphorically or they have an interesting way of just describing what life is like as they live it.
Yeah.
So that's what interests me about lyric writing. So the thing about lyric writing and melody, which is also interests me, is I've never written lyrics and then like written a song for it.
It's always the lyrics come after the music is there.
Almost during.
Oh, okay.
So like, say for Cave Singers, for instance,
sure.
Derek will have like a guitar riff.
Yeah.
And then I'll just start making stuff up. And a lot of it is like half words, half nonsense.
Right.
And so I'll go back and kind of like construct what I think like the story is. Maybe there's a narrative arc to it.
Uh-huh.
Maybe there's like some, it's just a postcard. It's just some imagery.
Right.
And that's good enough for me.
Yeah.
But I have to like kind of like after the fact figure out what it's kind of about, if it's about anything.
Uh-huh.
But it doesn't really have to be about anything necessarily. And for me, and then fill in the nonsense with actual words, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, and that's not even necessary.
Sounds like a Mad Libs.
Yeah, it's not even necessary, but I do that. But I think the thing is, sometimes things come out of me when I'm doing it in that way that I would have never been able to write before.
Yeah.
It just, like, it comes from straight inspiration. It comes with me and Derek and Marty playing together, and then it comes out in a different way when I just write songs by myself. At my house or something like this.
Sure.
But then it's different because it's different from writing, say, like a poem or writing a creative nonfiction piece or writing a paper for school or something like this.
Yeah.
Because there's like...
It has to make sense.
This other, like now there's music. When I write a paper for school, I don't have to go perform it. You know? Like it's... But that's the other thing. Like poetry has to be all-inclusive on its own. So it has to have rhythm and melody, and this is like lyrics to an existing melody already.
Right, right.
So you almost don't want to add too much melody if there's too much melody in the song.
Yeah.
Because it'll be too much.
Yeah.
But then
you can always go with the Beck approach and, you know, one line can be about palm trees and the next line can be about a tombstone.
See, that's what I like, yeah. But I think for like kind of cryptic, like lyric writing like that, that means like so much to him, I imagine.
Do you think so?
I think so. He seems like he writes lyrics that are very personal.
Yeah.
And like, and maybe he saw like a palm tree or, you know, I don't know. I can't think of anything. I just want to say sled or something. A pair of ice skates.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it means something to him.
Sure.
So
it's just stream of consciousness.
Yeah, stream of consciousness. And that's how I started writing maybe after college. And
really?
I was like, it was more like just like kind of like image capture, you know, just like this, and like feeling, but not be like, I feel really, very sad, but just like more like, you know, broken down factory falling into the ground or whatever.
Sure.
Like that image means that I'm sad or whatever,
right.
You know
right.
what I mean? Like
yeah,
this
yeah,
kind
yeah.
of things,
yeah.
but I don't have to tell you that I'm sad. And so, and like maybe even going further with abstracting human feelings by incorporating more maybe even mundane images sometimes can be powerful, I think.
Yeah.
For me.
So is a lot of, would you say that a lot of your stuff is autobiographical?
Yeah.
It is?
Yeah. Lyric writing, yeah, for sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. In a way that's like, hopefully, I mean, with the Cave Singers, I feel like that there's two other guys in the band. So it's important to me to like kind of be a little bit more we than I.
Right.
And be a little bit more general. With the solo record, that was definitely like a very personal affair, and something that I did in kind of like a positive isolation.
Yeah.
In this like apartment, but it was just like, but I did spend a lot of time doing that by myself. With Cave Singers, I spent a lot of time doing it with those guys.
Yeah.
So I'm like writing lyrics for us, I feel like.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that.
And then for the other thing, I'm writing lyrics for me, but then maybe even beyond that, I'm writing like this stuff for everybody because it's like meant to be listened to.
Yeah.
By an audience.
Well, let's do this. Let's take our second musical break.
Okay.
And let's play something from your solo record. Do you have something that you would like to play from that? A suggestion? Or should we just go random?
We could play... I can't remember the name of the song right now. That was a good segue in there, and I totally
love it.
I totally came up, but I have a good one in my mind that I'm thinking of.
Okay, we can figure it out later.
Oh, Blue Garden.
Blue Garden.
Yeah,
there we go. All right, this is Blue Garden off of Pete Quirk's solo record. And what's the name of the solo record?
Fail On, Fail Better.
And it's available now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. On iTunes and Bandcamp, and if you see me on the street, I just carry them.
Carry a box of them.
At the mansion in Ohio
that
I'm going to buy.
And if you get $1,000 with the disc,
I mean, you can't,
you know Pete won the lottery.
You can't lose with that deal.
Right? Only 10 bucks.
Yeah.
All right. This is Blue Garden by Pete Quirk, and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Stay with us.
Clotheslines hang in alleyways across America. There you lay, one hand in your pocket, lost in a broken dream. They all know, they all roam, and down below, shallow grave. Touchdown ends a game. Bar empties into the street. But you and I go our ways. One hand in my pocket, fumbling a set of keys. They all know, they all roll, down below, shallow grave. They all know, they all roll, down below, shallow grave. When I
performance wise, when you started performing,
yep.
How old were you? You said you were kind of, you would jam and stuff with like in high school and things like that. But
yeah.
What was the first time you got up on stage and sang in front of a audience?
First time, well, I did do like a, in high school we played like some kind of high school function.
Sure.
Like a talent
show or something like that.
It was
that.
Like a variety show or something like that. But we did, that was like a cover band. We covered some songs and I don't think we played any original songs.
Yeah. So how'd that go?
It was good. My parents were there. I think they were like, I was pretty quiet. Like, I mean, in my way.
Timid.
I was just like kind of kept to myself. And I was gregarious if I felt comfortable.
Sure.
And usually I warm up and then I'm pretty outgoing. I just took an online test and I'm an extrovert. I just found this out.
Really?
Just recently. Yeah. I thought I was an introvert.
Really?
Yeah.
You thought you were an introvert?
Yeah. And I'm an extrovert.
Isn't Where did you take this test? What's the test?
On the internet.
Is it on like a Tumblr blog? Because I don't know if I would trust that.
I had a lot of pop-ups.
I don't know. Pete, I don't know if that's scientifically accurate.
I know. It doesn't seem very good.
Yeah. Once I'm saying it out loud.
But my girlfriend took it too. And it seems somewhat reputable. So I don't know. There was like some like cartoon like stuff. Like, so, but anyway, I think my parents' reaction was like, because I like ran around and I like brought a, what do you call it? I can't think of it right now. The thing filled with candy that you like break open.
Oh, a pinata.
I brought a pinata on stage and I like broke it apart.
Oh,
like,
so you weren't timid or shy at all?
No, I like went crazy.
Wow.
Like when the timid kid went crazy.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So I was like, whoa, what's this all about? And I like really like went for it.
Were you nervous at all? Like, was it nervous energy maybe that kind of caused you
to but I think there's something about me that like likes to do that.
Sure,
you know,
okay.
I like to perform. There's another part of me that like comes out when I do that.
Yeah.
You know, or... Yeah, so I did that. I think my mom was really surprised and maybe got winged with, like, you know, like a gobstopper or something. Yeah,
right.
So that was the first time. But and then I played in another band that was, like, kind of post-high school where we played a few shows at bars and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But we kind of, like, were more – we were always, like – messed up and like just jam on stage and it was always super like just tragic, you know, which was kind of like went along.
It's kind of fall apart.
We were kind of dressed like we're in the usual, Reservoir Dogs. And,
yeah,
like,
there you go.
You
man.
Know, and just like we'd like smoke pot and got on stage and didn't really know what we were doing. All of a sudden I had a trumpet. I was playing a trumpet for a while on stage and I didn't
Did
even,
you learn how to
no,
play it?
No. I'm afraid not, no. I mean, I played it my way, so I guess.
Yeah.
No, still refuse to learn anything at this point.
Uh-huh. Trumpet's hard, too, man.
Trumpet's hard.
Trumpet is really hard.
Yeah, so I just, like, kind of, like, it was, like, just, like, this goose on stage. But then I did that, and that was cool. I mean, we were on stage. We opened up for bands and stuff locally in town. And then I did that. Again, musically, like, kind of periodically. But, like, in Philadelphia, I played in a band with my friend, and what we did was we would get together, and we would, like, I don't know, be like, let's make White Russians and, like, record some music. And I had this four-track and this reverb pedal and this other stuff, and he had a few things. He had a guitar, you know, and this kind of, like, old, kind of busted acoustic guitar, and we would just hang out for, like, hours and just record music. And
Loop stuff.
Yeah, loop stuff, improvisate stuff. I would sing on top of it at the time, make up stuff, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
that's a fun thing.
And that's what really – that's what, like, kind of, like, the high school thing was cool and that – But then this was like, all right, this is like something that's really, I'm really interested in this.
Yeah.
And it's such a fun thing to do with another person, man.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
Yeah.
I totally agree. And the first time I really did something like that was in college for me. And like, it was with a buddy of mine who we played in bands together and stuff. And like actually having like a recording where you're collaborating with something is a really, like when you're into playing music.
Yep.
is like the first time that happens and you're able to like press play and listen back to whatever happened. Mm. The magic that was made, man, is like a, God, it's like a brain opening experience, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It's enlightening.
Yeah.
And it's a very, very special and profound feeling.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
To have something like that. I mean, it's, you know, it for anybody, you know, whatever they do, like you finish working on your hobby project, you finished, you know, restoring your 1987 Trans Am.
Nice.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Or a painting that you've been working on for a year or something like that. Like I mean, it's a profound feeling when you finish something like that.
Yeah.
So that's totally. Yeah, I get that.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a really great moment. I mean, I think by that time I was probably 25 or 26 around there.
Yeah.
Maybe 24, 25. And so we would just hang out and do that, him and I, my friend Jesse, who lives in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
He actually just sent me a whole box, a photo of it, and he said, "These are going in the archives, but like, let's get together on a rainy day or something." And it's this whole box, and I was like, "How many tapes are there?" And he's like, "There's like 20 tapes. They're all Tascam, four track tapes."
You know?
And so I was like, "Man, that's so crazy." And it's so cool because I feel like from 26 to now, there was some time in there where I probably would have lost those tapes. So I'm glad that he held on to them and archived this stuff. You know, and he has kids now, and But I was like, what a rad thing to go back there and just be able to go through those tapes with him.
Oh, yeah.
I want to do that soon. So that was the first time that I like actually was like really making music, but with like intent of like doing it for just music's sake. Uh-huh. And and like starting to sing for real, you know.
Now, were you at this point, were you using basically the voice that you use now?
No, it was different.
Or was it an iteration of it?
I feel like it probably sounded somewhat similar, but I mean, there was, it was, maybe it was a little British. Maybe.
Yeah. You're going the Brit pop route.
We were listening to a lot of like Bauhaus at the time and like, and a lot of, what were we listening to? Something else. I can't think of it. We're really into this band, Silver Apples.
Okay. Right?
Which is like this two guys from the 60s and early 70s, I think. But they also did a lot of like this. A lot of the music was like kind of droney with this like really old farfisa that I had that I kept in my.
What's a farfisa?
It's just like this really old organ. It almost sounds kind of like creepy.
Oh, okay. It's got like a whirly in it or something?
It doesn't. It kind of has that on its own.
Okay.
It kind of has that word up sound.
Gotcha.
And I actually don't know too much about them, but I found it somewhere and it ended up working. So we just like incorporated. I mean, it was a real like kind of ragtag, you know, pieces of equipment, like stuff that we just found around. And it was really more about the doing than, you know, what we came up with. But we came up with some really cool stuff.
Yeah,
and a lot of most of the stuff that we came up with was by mistake. And some of the best moments, I think, were mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was really cool. So it's like, oh, cool, let's keep doing this. But it really, like, we really became really good friends by doing that. And we were already friends. But it, like, made us, like, brothers or something.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, oh, yeah. It's a very personal thing.
Yeah. Too. And you become, I mean, I'm like, hey, I'm going to, like, sing about, like, whatever's going on in my life right now in front of you. Get ready, but I would never say that. I would just start doing it. And so there's this level of like vulnerability and intimacy that you like get going with somebody.
Yeah.
Which is totally good for you.
Yeah.
It's great.
Did you ever, when you really started doing this, like let's jump forward a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you, when the cave singers really started taking off, like when you get into like a studio setting, was there an uncomfortable?
Yeah.
Was it uncomfortable for you to do that in front of like a studio engineer?
Yes.
It was.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Because usually, like singers are, like for people who don't know, singers are usually in an isolation booth by themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't like it.
Yeah.
Well, because let's see. The first time that I recorded like was with this band Hint Hint, That was a few years before Cave Singers kind of got going. Uh-huh. Actually, maybe like 3 or 4 years.
Was that, were you in Seattle at the time?
Mm-hmm.
You were.
Yeah. And that band was kind of like, maybe, like, it definitely like helped me like become a better musician and a better singer, uh-huh. lyric writer. And kind of like learn a lot of stuff that like, maybe I was like, I'm maybe not going to do that anymore. I'm going to try this new thing. And that's like kind of, I left a lot of that, just like learned from that process and then had a new experience with the Cave Singers.
Right.
And so that's how the Cave Singers, I wouldn't have been able to do the Cave Singers without that band.
Yeah.
But that band did record. The first recording we did at our friend's house in Bellingham, and he had like this like binaural skeleton skull that I was singing into, and I was like on ecstasy or something, you know what I mean? And I had like no shoes on, and I was just like, and so I was very comfortable. Yeah. Like I was just like making up new lyrics, you know what I mean? And like
touching your own face.
Yeah. Just like whatever. And I was like smoking weed, and I was just like, this is great, man. You know?
Yeah.
And like, I felt very comfortable, and it was like this shack in the middle of the county of Bellingham, and we were all there, and
right.
It was super magical.
Yeah.
It was beautiful. And so I felt very comfortable doing that. And he was just like,
well, and he's a friend too.
He's a like, friend. And he's just like, dude, you know, like it was just, I never really felt that nervous. And I felt excited that music that I made with these other people was getting recorded and it was going to come out.
Yeah.
Somebody was going to put it out.
Yeah.
And this is really, you know, this is pretty cool. And so, but our next record that we did, we recorded with like in a real studio. And like started with drums, bass, guitar, this on a click, maybe a few of them.
Yeah.
And then song number two, you know, drums, bass, this, no singing yet.
Right.
So I did all the singing at the end, which is like sort of a way that people do it a lot.
Right.
And so I sang all the songs at the end when the music was already done. And yeah, I don't really, you know, that's not really a good way for me to do it.
Yeah.
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 Because I get nervous and then they're like, oh yeah, I feel like you're a little pinchy, you know, or this was like a little this or that. And then I start overthinking things.
Right.
Which is one of my pastimes. And, and then it, you know, your mind can turn on you.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
If you're on like take 7, and then you're like, I'm not going to get it. Then you're nervous. That comes through.
Uh-huh.
And stuff like that. And you can do it. And I have done it. And I feel like I've done a good job with it. But I definitely prefer singing along with the band and recording vocals live, which is what I just did with the new Cave Singers record.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Almost, I'd say, like 80%, 85% of the songs are recorded with me singing along when the band is getting their take.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And that just makes it easier because it's like, ah, I messed up a little bit here and there and be like, well, if you can't live with that, then we have to record like everything again.
Right.
So it's kind of like, nah, I'm cool. But like, I'm not cool. But like, I just tell everybody I'm cool. And then I go outside and just like actually get cool with it. You know what I mean? Like ask the universe to help me or something.
Right. Right.
But then it's like, but then it's done, you know? But then I sang it like, and then I pretended to sing it like I was like, kind of like almost gesturing like I was at a show.
Yeah.
And I'm performing like I was at a show. Uh-huh. And I feel like that's when I sing best.
So maybe that's kind of how you had to put yourself in that mind, that mindset.
I did this time.
Yeah.
And it worked out very well, I thought.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
You finally figured it out. You cracked the case, man.
I just prefer, that way is just easier for everybody involved because there's less takes.
Right.
And I'm not like a perfect singer, especially live. Like, I mean, I think a lot of it is more emotion and sometimes intensity and stuff like that.
Yeah. Right? But that's what makes a live show so great.
Right.
Though, right.
Right.
Like it's, you're not getting the totally produced 11th take that has to be perfect on the record.
Right.
You're getting like real raw, maybe emotion sometimes, you know, from the people playing the music.
Yeah.
You know, you're getting the real thing.
Yeah.
And that's why like live shows are so special.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, there's an interesting like kind of sequential order to all this because I think at one point I was really like, I want to be a better singer. I want to be a better technically, like, I want to know how to, like, kind of, like, do harmonies of my own voice and stuff right. like this. If, yeah. if it's available, like, if I can do it, you know? But I wouldn't have done, like, I wouldn't be so, like, I tried to, like, maybe do a more kind of perfect studio version of my voice in different recording sessions yeah. before with Hint Hint or Cave Singers. And it did make me a better singer.
Yeah.
Like, doing that did make me a better singer. So there is that about it. You know, like, it forced me. It didn't force me because I forced myself to do it.
Sure.
I paid to do it. But it did make me a better singer. So that is a good thing
yeah.
about it.
Yeah, totally.
Like, when I was singing live for the Cave Singers record, I used stuff that I learned from those processes
mm-hmm.
to just kind of almost tell myself, nope, you're going to this. You're going, that's, back it up a little bit.
Yeah.
Get, you know, closer to, like, he'd be like, get a little closer to the mic. I was already getting closer to the mic
uh-huh.
just from doing it, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
And so I just had more knowledge about it. So that's just what it, I mean, sometimes it just takes time. I think for me to learn something.
Sure.
It's just going to take time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
But I still get nervous. I get nervous for shows, but then you're performing. So it takes over. But when you get nervous to record, it's another thing because you can hear it.
Right.
And that's,
well, and it's right in your ears.
It, yeah. So somebody's yeah, listening yeah. to it and be like, oh, yeah. this guy sounds weird. Uh-huh. Well, you know, why does he sound weird? Oh, because he sounds tense. He sounds nervous.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
done this 34 times and feels like he didn't get it right.
Right.
And you can hear that. Uh-huh. And I've heard my, there's, I can hear that. I can hear my voice not sure on things that I've done before.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Now, what was the experience? Where, was it a nerve-wracking experience to, like, be approached by a label like Matador? Or Jag Jaguar, like, you know,
yeah,
those
like a the, bigger label,
yeah, those yeah. I mean, those labels have a lot of, like, you know, not only clout with them, but they have a great history of being great
yeah.
labels.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Derek's band prior to Cave Singers was on Matador, so
Pretty Girls.
Yeah, my girlfriend at the time,
yeah,
ex-girlfriend now, was on that label.
Uh-huh.
Oh, it was in Pretty Girls, so I kind of
right,
like knew
right.
knew about that. World, I guess.
Uh-huh.
But I still kind of couldn't believe that we were, like, playing shows and, like, how many people were coming.
Right.
Do you know, like, it was still, like, the whole thing was blowing my mind, kind of. I was like, whoa, people, yeah. like, I've done.
I can't even imagine it.
Like, we would, like, play a show at the Sunset. Our first show at the Sunset we played, and there was, like, nobody there. But right. there was, like, people there hanging out, drinking. And then we played, like, Dancing on Our Graves, like, one of our more popular songs.
Uh-huh.
And, like, the whole, like, whoever was there just kind of turned and, like, applauded. And I was like, that's weird, man. Like, they're not even here to, like, we're sound checking.
Right, right.
You know, and I was like,
yeah.
I've never had a reaction like that with anything else I've ever done.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so, and that just, like, it got, it was, like, more like that, like, where we would play the Crocodile. And then the next time we play the Crocodile, like, twice as many people would be there.
Right.
And I was just like, whoa, this is crazy. Like, I just kind of couldn't believe it, and I was just really excited.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the biggest show that you've ever played?
I'd say, like, the biggest shows we played in Seattle are, like, at the Showbox or something.
Right, right.
Which was, like, maybe we sold out the Showbox one time.
Uh-huh.
Which is cool. It's a huge yeah. place, but it doesn't, like, seem that huge
right,
when you're playing.
Right.
I mean, it's still a lot of people.
That's no small feat.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that felt really great. But it really, like, kind of, I never really expected it. Although, like, if somebody was like, you know, it would be cool if that happened. Like, if I started writing music, started the Cave Singers, and it started to do well, and I was successful from that, like, uh-huh. I wouldn't be like, I don't want that. Like, right. I'd always be like, yeah, cool, rad.
Yeah
I don't want to be a bike messenger anymore. You know? But I didn't really think about it so much. But uh-huh. then once it started coming, I mean, I don't know if I was, like, nervous per se, because I just didn't know anything about it at all.
Yeah.
It was so, right. like, it was such, like...
So foreign.
Such, like, there was so much, like, unknown to it that it was just exciting.
Yeah.
And then what we were doing, to me, it felt right. Like, I felt really right playing music with Derek and Marty, and I felt really right how we were playing music, what we were uh-huh. doing, kind of like our mission statement that was somewhat unspoken, but, like, I was like, this is what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah.
So if people like it, rad. But there's a comfortability because I feel like this is what I'm supposed to do.
Right.
And it made it a lot easier.
Yeah.
Than like, I feel like this isn't what I'm supposed to do. And people really love it.
Well, I'm noticing a little bit of a trend here too, Pete. Like, yeah. At the beginning of your story, mm-hmm. where you first leave home and you find your group, you know, you're finding your spot, you're finding your place.
Mm-hmm.
And that just keeps on progressing throughout your life, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Where you're basically finding your spot, you're finding your place, you're finding the zone in which you are happiest.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's pretty special, man.
Yeah.
That's cool.
It is cool.
Because a lot of people don't find that ever.
Yeah.
You know? Like
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, and like finding, you know, like whether it's like, you know, the track team, the creative writer, creative writer, you know, the poets at college, like kind of the people in Philadelphia that were kind of these adventurous spirit kind of travelers. And then these musicians who were kind of an offshoot of that really. And, and kind of like being like, well, I think I'm like one of them and I want to, you know, like, I think I could be, and I want to see it. Now I am. And now I'm going to move on to this other. And it really just like, but maybe I'm not exactly like you guys, you know, but maybe I'm like, you know, and you're like kind of letting things go and layers are starting to peel off and like this. And so then you end up starting to know who you are.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how I've done it. Cause and it's really interesting process of, I don't know how any of us like human beings, you know, like do any of this stuff.
That's really interesting, man. I think that's a really interesting take that you don't hear a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Is that where you're not molding yourself into a certain way, but you are, I don't even know how to reword that, what you just said, but it's like you're finding your mold or something like that, you know?
Yeah. Like, I think that's true. Yeah.
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 That's cool. I like that.
And like, I think that there is for me, and there's been times where I've been super uncomfortable. I've been super unhappy with who I thought I was.
Sure.
Or who I thought other people thought I was.
Right. Right.
And there's, and that still happens, you know, but, not in the way that it used to, but there is like a thing of kind of peeling those layers away and then just being like, well, this part of me has stayed throughout all these different. So maybe I am like, that's part of me.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's never. So let me like be like confident that that's just who I am. And I can show that to other people.
Right.
Whether it's cool or not or whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I totally get it because I'm exactly the same way.
Yeah.
And I've, you know, for the longest time I've gone through life looking at other people mm-hmm. who, you know, I mean, you can look at it, take anybody out of the crowd and go, man, that guy's got his shit together.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, realistically, he probably doesn't. He just knows how to exude confidence.
Yeah. Maybe he does. You know? Maybe he doesn't.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's got to be people out there that do have everything figured
out. They do. You know? Yeah. They're out like, there. I hate them.
Yeah. They are assholes.
Yeah. They're the worst. They're not
allowed. They're billionaires.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Right.
They're not allowed in my castle.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Fort Quirk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, no fully actualized people allowed here.
Well, let's talk a little bit about, let's switch gears here. You've got this new album coming out. It's called Banshee.
Yep.
It's out February 19th.
Yep.
The new Cave Singers record. You guys are kind of putting it out by yourself mm-hmm. this time around, right?
Totally. Yeah, we are.
Now, how's that feel?
That feels good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Because you were on, and, you know, I don't mean to, like, make you feel bad.
No, it's fine.
But you were, you know, you were working with these labels like Matador and Jag Jaguar and now you're back to kind of doing it by yourself.
Yeah.
Was that kind of a hit to the ego a bit? Like having to go back?
No, I mean,
a little bit, or
we've always been on a label.
Mm-hmm.
And any records that I've done probably in the last 10 or 15 years have been on a label.
Yeah.
So I've never done anything like this before.
Oh, really?
And then also to go back to your question about being on Matador or Jag Jaguar,
mm-hmm.
that felt really great. I mean, those are great labels, and I was really flattered to be on those labels, and I still am, and I think they did. They're just cool, cool labels, and they put out a lot of cool music. I mean, they put out music that I just listen to regardless.
Regardless.
So
freaking Pavement, man.
Right.
Like,
yeah, totally. And then Jag Jaguar, just puts out so much good music.
Oh yeah.
And like, I just like love all their like artists and stuff like that.
Well, and they're part of that whole group, like Secretly Canadian and like all those amazing labels that are just like, I mean, pretty much everything that comes out of there is just gold.
Totally.
You know?
So, so what happened was basically we were like, well, what if we like, see if we can like fund the recording of this record ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So we can kind of just, we already have the songs.
Yeah.
They're already written, you know, and we already know who we want to do it with, record it with.
Yeah.
With Randall. And so Derek got the idea of doing the Indiegogo thing. Which is like Kickstarter or whatever.
Right.
I didn't even know what it was.
It's unlike Kickstarter because you get to keep whatever is made of having to...
Yeah,
so make it all the way to the end.
Totally.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You say 20,000 and you make 18,000 on Kickstarter, you're not going to get 18. You won't get any, and maybe you could try it again. So, but we were like, let's just make this record without like any involvement.
So this was personal choice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just to see, like, and I think we work really hard on the band, you know, and we do a lot of like kind of things that keep the band self-sufficient and running and touring. And Derek is really great at that.
Yeah.
He's kind of the de facto manager of the band, of helping really keep things going.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And, so we were just like, well, let's see if this, cause we were interested, and we saw a couple other artists that we had just toured with put out their own records. Devil Makes Three. And then there was another band, but the Devil Makes Three was doing really well, and they were putting out their own records. And so also when you put out your own records, you own your record. So when licensing, publishing, anything like this comes up, then you make, you're the only one that gets all that too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so you're kind of just running your thing. And as long as you have the time and have, you know, want to run, you're kind of running your own label, which is what I'm starting to realize. So, and all we do is the band.
You kind of said that.
Yeah. You know, but I'm like,
That's actually a lot more work than
but it is kind of.
Oh yeah. I would imagine.
But it's like the best kind of work to do because you're running your own business.
Well, it seems beneficial too, because you're learning how to do it.
Like, again, you're learning how to do something again.
Yeah. And you're learning the ins and outs, and there's nothing bad ever comes about learning more about your own thing.
Right. Yeah.
Like, yeah, I think it's really cool. The one thing that I see whenever I see a band that used to be on a label, my mind instantly goes to the space where they were like, oh, the label doesn't like it or something like that.
Yeah.
You know? So it's good to know that this was like personal choice that you guys made the decision to do this.
I think it just all organically happened that way, that this is the right choice.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
And for us and you know, and we'll see how it goes. I mean, so far it's been really cool.
Yeah.
I mean, the cool thing about the Indiegogo thing is that it's crowdsourcing. So, or fan based. And so, and our fans are, you know, really great, really supportive, you know, we'll come to like multiple shows, and we're like in contact with them. So we're like, well, let's see if this works. So we can like basically go into business, with our fans.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of how we worded it, but that's really true. Like I really felt that
totally.
That was sincere. And so I feel like that's why we got back so much support.
Yeah.
Is because that's what we're doing.
Yeah. You know?
So so once we started doing that and seeing how much support we were getting through the Indiegogo, be like, this seems like the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Like, even if there is like, we could be on a label or maybe a different label or whatever, we're like, we're not even interested in that anymore.
Yeah.
We just want to see what this is like. It's like that kind of unknown factor of being like, yeah, but this, it's like coming up with the lyrics. It's like, but this is what you're supposed to do.
Well, and once again, you're finding your spot.
Right. Yeah. This is what we're supposed to do. It's obvious.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So we could either force this other way, or just go with this way that's kind of presenting itself, yeah. this path here.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of digging, like, doing that kind of thing these days with my life. So that's what we did. And now we're, like, kind of in the middle of it, but the record hasn't come out. The neat thing that's just kind of a cool story is that we did the Indiegogo thing, and we raised, like, $25,000. Which is
over
great.
It was over
it was what over you guys budget so if we did yeah. Kickstarter we would have got our money and it was over budget and we did all these things and it was great and like just like so much support, you know.
That's awesome.
And like people like seemed really excited to like be part of this process
yeah.
with us.
Yeah,
and it's rad.
Well, you see that, I mean, you know, I think the fans, and I've thought this forever,
mm-hmm.
is that the fans are as much a part of kind of the ethos of the band mm-hmm. as the band members are.
Sure.
They may not write the music, they may not perform it, and you definitely wouldn't want some of your fans even touching your equipment. But I mean, you know, and that's not to say bad things about your fans at all, but
some have tried.
Yeah, right. No, you are drunk, sir. Yeah,
sorry, security.
But you see this. I mean, you see the same thing with, you know, what just happened with David Bowie. Like David mm-hmm. Bowie just died, and he touched so many people.
Mm-hmm.
Like so many people thought of his music as such, like a personal thing.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
and I mean, it's art. That's what it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And David Bowie wouldn't be there if it wasn't for his fans.
No.
Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I've always thought that, like, you know, the fans and the bands, you know, is a very kind of symbiotic relationship.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And the audience, because I'm an audience member of other things.
Sure.
You know, I'm the performer of this music for the Cave Singers, but then I'm also a recipient in a lot of ways all day long.
Yeah.
And right. I choose of what I you know, like in ways there's things that I don't choose to receive, but like when I listen to music and stuff, I'm like, there's something about this that I identify or makes me feel good or whatever.
Yeah.
Or helps me when I feel really bad. And so like I'm a fan of that, but also I'm just like, I'm part of this. I connect with this.
Yeah.
And so that's like what, because I do that myself, so I know when other people do that, that's really important and powerful for them.
Sure.
So if they come up and tell me that, that's really, I'm like, thank you. And they're like, no, thank you. And I'm like, no, thank you. And I'm like, no, thank you. I'm like, we got to stop this,
yeah,
this madness. But I really do mean it, you know?
Because sure.
And the thing about the band and the audience and stuff, like, you know, writing the music and stuff, like, helps me. It's a therapeutic mm-hmm. process. And so hopefully that's, like, something that they, whoever they may be, mm-hmm. You know, relate to.
Yeah.
But so we did these Indiegogo shows. We had sort of a perk that was listed, and you can have a Cave Singer show at your house.
Oh, cool.
In your garage.
Yeah.
At the tennis club, like wherever. And so we sold like 10 of those, and we just finished like the 9th one. We have one more left.
Oh, really?
But one was like at like a family barbecue that they've had for, you know, generations. And then one was like a 40th birthday party in Portland.
Yeah. Was it weird?
Well, no, they've all been great, but it's like you don't know what you're getting into, man. You
right,
know, because
right.
it could be any, it could be like one guy playing Xbox and be like, yeah, I just want you guys to play back there while I try to beat this level or something.
That would be awesome.
And I'm like, that would be pretty cool.
It's like, wow, this video game's pretty entertaining.
Yeah, I'm like, whoa, just like playing our songs or something. Well, you have no idea. But they're all, everyone that we went to was just like, we can't believe you guys are here. Like, we've like seen you, you know, 4 times.
Uh-huh.
They have a Cave Singer shirt on or something. And they're, right. and then they're just like, are you guys hungry? You know, we have this, all this. And they're just like fans and audience members and like, you know, participants in this thing that we do.
That's really cool.
Yeah,
and I like that kind of stuff. I love seeing David Bazan. Like David Bazan, like now tours almost exclusively.
Right.
Just doing house shows.
Yeah. That's
and cool. these super intimate things.
Yeah.
And I think, man, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Speaking of like,
so cool.
The symbiosis between audience and artists.
Like,
I mean, that's there.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And they're quiet. You know.
Oh yeah.
Those audiences are quiet when you play things like that. So. Better have some other stuff to talk about too, I think, between songs sometimes.
Yeah.
But
yeah, you got to change your banter.
Yeah, you right? got to like, yeah, I realized I did some solo shows and opened up for this guy, and it was like a similar thing like uh-huh. that. And I was like, actually, for the first time, was like, I knew what, like a few banter things that I was going to talk about.
Yeah.
You know, almost like comedy bits in a way.
Right, right.
And I was always like, I always like was kind of weird about that. Like having too much, like kind of knew what I was going to do.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it actually worked out pretty well because I was like, I'm going to talk about this. I don't know exactly what I'm going to say, but I know I'm going to talk about this topic or Rambo or whatever, you know, right. whatever it may be.
It's going to spiel on Rambo 3.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's the deal with the going from kind of being on a record label mm-hmm. to now self-releasing or being on our own record label.
Sure.
Is, like I said, just seems like what we're supposed to do.
Yeah.
And then, but then we're hiring out public, you know, we're doing everything a label would do.
Right.
We like made our own records. We hired publicists. We have a distribution deal.
Mm-hmm.
And everything's kind of how a label would be. And then we'll just see like, you know, how it does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
it's
it's
been a cool learning process just to do it.
Yeah, well, I'm like I said, I've been a fan of you guys for a long time,
yeah.
And I couldn't be more stoked for you. The song, cool. you know, that you guys released on the new album is mm-hmm. fantastic.
Oh,
I
thanks.
Can't wait to hear the rest of it too. Mm-hmm. So February 19th, mm-hmm. Banshee mm-hmm. Comes out, and it'll be in record stores everywhere, right? And it'll be on iTunes
everywhere.
And
yep.
Bandcamp,
totally.
And all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
One thing, we got to wrap things up here,
sure.
but I would like to ask you. I read this old interview mm-hmm. with you mm-hmm. today.
Yeah.
And it mentioned, or you had mentioned mm-hmm. that at one point you had taken some psychedelics and then did a live show and you were playing with some like new melodica that you had got and it didn't work or something like that.
Yeah.
Like no sound was coming out.
Yes.
How in the hell do you do psychedelics and then get up in front of people and try to like sing songs that are somewhat established? How does that work? Did I just put you in a,
well, there's
we
been,
cut
I was
this
like
out.
I was like, which time was it, you know? And that's and I don't do that kind of stuff anymore. I would never do that now. But there's been a few when, you know, when yeah. when I used to like do drugs like that
uh-huh.
or whatever, do drugs at all,
sure.
You know, there was like a kind of rule. Okay, nobody's allowed to smoke pot anymore, which we don't even do anymore. But,
oh yeah,
but
yeah.
because we all mess everything up. But a lot of those things were not intentional. It wasn't like at like noon. Hey, I'm gonna like take psychedelics before
right,
I
right.
like perform, before we open up for the Fleet Foxes and there's like 4,000 people.
Right.
Because I
was that one of the shows that
one
you
of
did
the it? Shows I was on. Like,
oh Jesus,
I was on, I think
Pete.
I was on like, yeah, like some kind of drugs or something. I can't remember. And it was like scary, you know, like it wasn't,
that's why I read that today and I was like, oh my God,
it wasn't like a chosen, thing. I think like one night had possibly blended into another. And uh-huh. so like, maybe there wasn't too much sleeping going on and things of this nature, but
yeah.
So it was like more, there was a few foggy years there, I'd say the Lost Weekend or whatever, but I would never do that now. So it's not uh-huh. like I don't want to ever give off the. Also, it's just like we probably didn't. I know that I probably didn't perform that well.
Sure.
I remember maybe one time doing that and being like, oh, like I'm like feel like I'm like full of a, like electric or something, you know, like
right,
or something
right.
like this. But it was never intentional, and I think the lifestyle kind of like maybe caught up with me in a little bit. You know
really?
What I mean? And the romanticism of it all and kind of getting carried away.
Uh-huh.
And like also, again, with the thing of being, hey, maybe this isn't who I am either.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then letting
totally.
And then letting that go.
Yeah.
And letting, hey, I'm not somebody that takes psychedelics and performs. I actually don't like doing that.
Yeah.
I like to meditate. I like to, you know, walk around the room and maybe do a little prayer or something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
That's who I am now. But
right.
that other person at that time had to do that to get here.
Right. Just figure it out.
Just figure it out.
Yeah.
But that was exciting time, too, to realize that I didn't – that wasn't the way for me.
Yeah.
You know? But I'm not that kind of that person. I how did I handle that? I didn't handle it. I could, you know, like I remember,
right.
I remember maybe later on that night or something being like not in good shape, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Almost so like I don't, a, I having don't, like an anxiety attack. I would
totally.
Imagine, right?
Yeah. I don't want to ever give off the impression that that's like something that I do that like, I'm like that, you know, that I can handle stuff like that or,
yeah.
or anything
yeah.
like, because I don't think it's true and I don't think it has anything to do with making music.
No. Know?
Yeah.
Uh-uh.
And I think that, but I had to like kind of go there and see what's rock and roll like. What's what, you know, the low level rock and roll star. Like, what does that feel like? What is like so much attention feel like, or more attention than I've ever had. And how do I handle that?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
and how does that change me and how, you know, how can that warp my sense of sort of morality and different things like that? Or just like, and then how can I reflect and have awareness and be like, no, I want to let that go.
Right.
So
right.
I can have longevity.
Yeah.
Yeah. As yeah. an artist, you know.
Well, I dig that, man.
Yeah.
That's good. And yeah. that's a good place to stop.
Cool.
We've gone full circle.
Yeah. Cool.
Pete.
Yeah.
Pete Quirk of the Cave Singers. Now yeah. I'm having trouble even saying it.
No problem.
Thank you so much, dude. Yeah. I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with me here in the backyard.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there you have it, folks. Our conversation with Pete Quirk of the Cave Singers. Fantastic chat, man. That was really good. I liked that. I liked it a lot. I liked it a lot. I hope you guys enjoyed it, too. Once again, a fond farewell to our very, very close friend, PJ Allers. I will miss this guy so, so much. And once again, we'll have a link at air-raid.net about how you can donate to his lovely wife and lovely daughter, because they're really going to need some help. So, if you would please, please, please go to air-raid.net and donate anything you can. $1, man, $1, anything that you can to help his family out with the medical expenses that have been accruing for a little under a year. And to his lovely brother, Nick Allers, who is a very close friend of mine as well. We love you, dude. And everything's going to be all right sooner than you think. Okay. All right. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thanks to Mr. Pete Quirk for coming on the show and the Cave Singers for allowing us to use the music and setting everything up. So it's been a real treat, man. Like I said, 2 years in the making. Finally got Pete on the show. You can subscribe to the Air Raid podcast on iTunes, and if you do, please take a moment to rate the show with a little star rating. Only takes a couple seconds, and literally, it only takes a couple seconds, and it helps us out in the long run. We're also available on the Stitcher, TuneIn, Cairo Radio apps, and now, of course, on the Spreaker app at the Adore Network at adore.fm. Or just visit www.air-raid.net to subscribe directly to our RSS feed. Keep in touch by liking our Facebook page at facebook.com, the Air Raid Podcast, or follow us on Twitter at Air Raid Net, or email me directly at aaron@air-raid.net. And remember to take the pledge, folks. Take the pledge to tell somebody you know about this show. If you think they'll like it, tell them. Bring it up in conversation. Sign them up when they're not looking. That always works. Right? Yes. Okay. To go out this week, we're going to be playing a new song off of the new Cave Singers album, Banshee, which comes out February 19th, 2016. This one's called Christmas Night. And it does not sound like a Christmas song, okay? All right? But it's great. It's so, so, so good. Oh, man. Thank you guys so much for listening. I just, swallowed weird there. We had a great time talking with you listening. And we'll see you next week with an all-new episode of the Air Raid Podcast. Have a good one, everyone. Hitting women on the street.
$1.5 billion. I don't know, maybe I go to Nordstrom's or something. You know what I mean?